This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Lauren Lester, the voice of Robin and Nightwing.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review,
hosted by Cal and Liam,
streaming at DCAUReview.com
and on your favorite podcast app.
Gotham City is out of control.
An entire city screaming in fear.
Supervillains walk the streets, preying on the innocent.
They will learn the true nature of harm.
The police are powerless. A creature prowls this urban wasteland.
Who's that?
He moves in darkness. For some, he is a rumor. A name whispered in the corridors of the underworld, waiting for the chance to strike. Let every criminal know the acid taste of fear.
You crazy!
Bat! Giant bat!
Gotham has forgotten what justice means. The Dark Knight is here to remind them.
He comes.
Who are you?
Batman. Good guys wear black.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 270 of the DCAU Review. I am Liam, and with me, as he always is Cal. Cal, this is a big week for our show for a couple different reasons. 270, it's a round number. It's not a big milestone number, but it's a round number.
Mm-hmm.
We have that, as we'll get to in a few moments. We have a very special episode of Batman to talk about, which ties in to a pretty massive comic book event's 30th anniversary, which happens to be this year. And then on top of all of that, we also have the return of one of our favorite special guest correspondents. So this is a big, big episode we got here for number 270.
A monumental episode. We should have saved this for like episode 300. But then again, not everything would have lined up, I think, for the for this to make it happen. So 270 works just fine. That's right, Liam. Very excited to talk today, as we do have a very special episode, a very special returning guest correspondent that is directly linked to not only Batman the Animated Series, but this very episode that we're discussing today. And that is the episode Bane. What else would you call it? There is nothing else to call this episode except Bane. And it is, of course, the one and only appearance of the character Bane in the original Batman the Animated Series run. And we have our very special guest, returning correspondent, good friend of the show, and director of the episode, among many episodes of the series, Mr. Kevin Altieri will be joining us in just a little bit here to talk about this very episode. And Liam, it's a fun chat with him, as he remembers everything that kind of went into not only creating the episode, kind of just the general thought process of bringing Bane into the show. He talks about, and we get to ask him whether or not they ever considered breaking Batman's back and doing the whole Nightfall mm-hmm. storyline. He gives us some insight on the general feeling of how the directors, including Mr. Bruce Timm, felt about the Bane character itself. And we even talk a little pro wrestling with him, as we talk about the very heavy influence of the Lucha Libre aspect of the Bane character in this episode. So we have a lot coming up here in just a little bit, and it's going to be definitely one to remember. And as fortuitous, as you said, as we are celebrating the 30-year anniversary here in 2023 of the Nightfall storyline, which was such a, we were talking about it before we went on, it was a cultural phenomenon in a way that I don't think modern day comics quite influence and reach the zeitgeist in the same way that some of these big storylines did from when we were kids. And thinking about just everything that Bane was, the Nightfall storyline, and the way that DC marketed this storyline, whether it was trading cards or pogs or action figures, like you really don't get that nowadays when it comes to the main line of comics. So it's this character Bane is very interesting, and we're going to learn a little bit today about the process of bringing that character, created just a year or two before this episode debuted, right into the Batman Animated Series world.
Absolutely, Cal. It's a really fun conversation. We'll get to pretty short order after, of course, we give you the regular credits and a brief synopsis of the plot. And before we give you all those credits, Cal, I must, of course, kick us off with the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, Bane.
That is right, Liam. And this episode originally aired here, in the States at least, on September the 10th, 1994, meaning we are coming up just a few short months here on the 29-year anniversary of this episode's debut. And of course, the official IMDb synopsis is brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today and get a litany of different podcasts available for your streaming pleasure. Not only do you get the entire Tim Talk catalog, which would include a review of this very episode itself, you also get the Jump on the Batwagon podcast, which is currently running through Batman the Animated Series and due to come up on a Bane review, I'm sure, here pretty shortly. Not only do you get both of those podcasts, you get our entire catalog as well, available for you all on the YouTube platform. So go over, what are you waiting for? Head over today and subscribe. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today.
That's right, Cal. So this is, as mentioned, the official synopsis for Bane, which was written by Mitch Bryan, directed by friend of the show and guest you'll hear in about 5 or so minutes, Kevin Altieri, with music by Lolita Ritmanis, and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such: Rupert Thorne hires steroid-enhanced mercenary Bane to eliminate Batman.
Short, sweet, to the point. You're not spoiling anything.
That's true. Yeah, like we said, we kind of go over the plot with Kevin, so we're not going to go beat by beat, blow by blow like we normally do, but suffice to say, we get the intro of Bane stepping off the plane and meeting with Rupert Thorne, and perhaps more importantly for this episode, his right-hand lady, that being the venomous Candace, who instruct him that Batman is just too much for any regular old criminal to handle, so they've called in this mercenary known as Bane, adorned at all times in this luchador mask. This very, very iconic. We'll talk about the look of the character and everything with Kevin, but he's going to go after Batman, and he's going to send him a message, which he does by taking poor Killer Croc to school here.
Just can't get good help these days.
So I have heard.
Candace, when Jake here comes around, tell him he's fired. Now let's do a little business, Mr. Bane. They'll never pin it on me, but that little fiasco cost me an easy 10 mil. You almost didn't get paid. You're lucky these diamonds didn't get nabbed in the smuggling bust.
No, Mr. Thorne. You're the lucky one.
I'm making my secretary available to you. She can provide any background you might need on your target.
My needs have already been met.
I'm paying you to go after Batman, not Killer Croc.
But the Batman will surely be on the reptile's trail. I will observe the Bat in action, and when I understand how he thinks and fights, I will break him. Now, where do I find this killer, Grok.
He truly just decimates him. And it's interesting, the strategy of Bane in the episode somewhat mirrors what we see in the Nightfall comic book storyline, where he really wants to be this character that observes who Batman is in order to identify any weaknesses and then exploit them. Mm-hmm. So in order to kind of be able to do that, he decides to take on Killer Croc first. And then from fighting Killer Croc, Bane fights Croc, not Batman. Bane fights Croc, takes him apart, as you mentioned, absolutely decimates him, leaves him in traction. And then through that way, sends Batman a message. Not only sends Batman a message through destroying poor Croc, but also destroying the Batmobile. And as Robin points out, you don't mess with a man's car. Like, that's just not what you do. All done with his bare hands, by the way. So Batman shakes down Killer Croc after some interrogation and some light threats. He does get some more information on just who his attacker was. And he reveals to him he had a South American accent and that he had a tube in his head. Very, very important to identifying this character as Batman heads back to the Batcave and being the true detective that he is, remembers that there was a project in South America in a Cuban, actually it's in a, I think he said in a Cuban prison to a project that was sort of mimicking what if Cuba decided to create a super soldier? What if they decided to do the Captain America program? And through this, I guess it would be Captain Cuba, not Captain America, the Captain Cuba program.
El Capitan.
There you go. Now we're talking. Culturally correct in that way. Thank you.
Something Croc said reminded me of a Cuban prison experiment I heard about. Peñadoro Prison, for lifers only.
Then we're looking for an escapee?
That's right. And there's only been one escape in 25 years. 3 years ago. Computer, run background file on Project Gilgamesh.
Gilgamesh, named after the warrior?
The ultimate warrior. A chemical plan to create super soldiers out of hardened prisoners. It was abandoned when they got more than they bargained for.
And what was that, sir?
They got Bane. After he escaped, Bane went into business for himself as a freelance assassin. Price per job, $5 million. So the question is, who wants to eliminate me?
That line is forming around the block, sir.
Let me put it this way. Who has $5 million to spend?
Complete with footage of the actual experiments, we see the person that was being experimented upon escape this prison. And it's quite shocking. And we learn that not only did the person escape, but he had been rumored to be sort of a gun for hire since then, and Batman believes that this possibly could be somebody that has come to Gotham, perhaps on the bankroll of one of the higher rolling criminals. But knowing that a couple of the other high usual suspects, Roland Daggett, Arnold Stromwell, are not potentially in on it, that has to be Rupert Thorne behind it, and he decides that he's going to make his way over perhaps to Candace to find out just what she may know about this this new gun for hire.
That's right. So they head to Candace's apartment, where Bane is there, and we get kind of the intrigue of this episode, where we find out that Candace has become a little bit taken with Bane, so to speak, and is kind of already throwing some options his way of what could happen once he destroys Batman, what he could then perhaps take over Thorne's operation as well and kind of rule Gotham with her by his side, of course.
I have anticipated his every move. Very soon now, I will allow you the pleasure of drawing the mask from Batman's decimated face.
With Batman out of the way, Gotham could be yours. So could I.
And what about your employer?
Well, accidents do happen. See you tonight.
And as they're speaking, she ends up leaving the apartment. It's actually not Candace's apartment. This is Bane's apartment.
Oh, that's right.
So Candace leaves, and Batman tails her in the Batmobile, hoping that they'll lead to some sort of update, while Robin stays to keep an eye on the apartment. And this leads to Bane kind of very suddenly getting somehow across the street and up a building in no time flat. And he and Robin have a brief dust up, and unfortunately Robin is just no match for the brute strength.
Submits him with a bear hug.
That's right. There's so much pro wrestling in this episode, which we delve into very in depth with Kevin. But knocks Robin out. And takes it. Meanwhile, Batman follows Candace to the apartment, and Candace sort of just explains how that even before Bane took this job, he was sort of fascinated by Batman, wanted to know everything about him. And also Candace happens to let Batman know that while he's been spying on Bane, Bane's been watching him as well. As Batman looks out the window, he sees something in the distance that catches his eye. It's actually Robin's tunic, his shirt, hanging there with a note telling Batman to meet Bane to settle this once and for all on a ship titled very aptly The Rose's Thorn. So that sets up our final battle, which again we'll get into in much greater detail in a little bit here, with Bane and Batman going back and forth while Robin is sort of being he's like strung up by his wrists, being lowered into a pool with a giant weight around his ankles. And then if that's not enough, once Robin gets free from that, once Batman's able to free him from drowning, he then has to take Candace on one-on-one. And Robin has a rough time in this episode. We'll just, he's really put through the grinder in this one, but that leads to Batman. Batman's trying to fight Bane, but just can't quite stop him in any way, and that's before Bane pulls out that secret weapon once again, which we saw him just sort of alluded to seeing him use on Croc earlier. He presses the button on his wrist, and we see the liquid begin to flow right into his brain as he begins to grow even bigger and more muscle bound. And Batman really can't do anything, to the point where Bane is just batting him around, and then he grabs him, he picks him up above his head. And it seems as if we are on the road to recreating that very famous Jim Aparo image of Batman being broken across Bane's knee. But thankfully, the Dark Knight has one last trick up his sleeve.
That's right. When during the scuffle, as you mentioned, he threw a batarang that Bane caught and did away with, crumpled it with his bare hands and threw it to the side. But during a barrel roll through the legs that Batman pulls off, he manages to grab it. And as Bane has him up ready for the breaking, Batman takes the crumpled batarang and jams it directly into the venom pump, I guess it is.
Sure.
Housed on his wrist. And this causes more and more of the drug to be jammed into his brain / spinal column, I guess, and causing him to overdose.
Toys. You try to fight me with pathetic little toys.
You've got nothing. Beg for mercy. Scream my name.
Never.
You are beaten. Now I will break you. Huh? No, no. The venom. Can't stop it. You can do this to me! I am invincible! I have
He begs Batman for mercy, which is pretty ironic, and Batman pulls the tube out of his head, causing him to collapse to the ground. And it's at this point that Candace manages to escape from Robin's grasps and runs away. But Batman agrees to let her go because he knows exactly where he's going, where she's going. And Batman meets Candace. Batman and Robin meet Candace back at Rupert Thorne's office. And that's where Candace is sort of cowering behind Rupert Thorne's desk as Batman walks in, tosses Bane's mask on the desk. And we'll talk a little bit about the visuals and what that means, especially for a Lucha Libre to lose his mask. But as we discuss it with Kevin, but drops Bane directly on Rupert's desk and says to try again. But he's not done there, as he also offers some evidence, the recorded conversation between Bane and Candace, where Candace had mentioned that she was willing to help Bane in getting Thorne out of the picture so that he could take over the Empire with her by his side. And the episode ends with Thorne angrily yelling at his secretary for her perceived treachery. So, and that kind of wraps
right.
it up.
So there. The luchador gets the ultimate humiliation as he's unmasked by his opponent. And that wraps up our episode recap. And without any further ado, Cal, as we'll get into scores and discussing the plot with a little bit more depth, let's throw it over to ourselves in our conversation with special correspondent and director of this very episode, Kevin Altieri.
All right, Liam, so we are going to bring in our special guest correspondent now, who just happens to be the director of this very episode, Bane. We are happy to welcome back to the program director, Mr. Kevin Altieri. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us back here on the DCAU Review.
Oh, my pleasure.
Man, we're excited to pick your brain about this episode. You know, as we get into discussing the plot of the episode here and kind of after our recap, we recognize that this was a huge moment in standard DC comic book continuity mm-hmm. here with the Batman Nightfall storyline. And I didn't realize until we were doing the research for the episode, this episode debuted in 1994. That comic came out in May of 1993. So that's a real quick turnaround to have to adapt a character and even parts of that storyline. Can you tell us anything about the process of how that came to be, adapting such a major seminal moment so quickly into the DCAU?
Well, that came in, it's like we're doing the series. And I remember talking to Bruce, both Bruce and I were, talking about like this new character, Bane. And we're going like, yeah, okay, here's this Mexican wrestler. It's like, all you got to do is yank that thing off his arm. And it's done. You know, we just felt that, I mean, I can't talk totally for Bruce, but as I remember, we were going and like, oh, and now because Superman had something happen to him, now starting with Batman, everyone's going to be, taken out. Yep. It's like, oh, he broke Batman's back.
Right.
And we just thought was just not cool, yes, Batman does get the snot beat out of him rather a lot. That's kind of who he is. Mm-hmm. And then he comes back.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole back-breaking thing and then, it just seemed to... too much like the death of Superman to me.
Totally understand that. So was there, from your recollection, was there any pressure from DC Comics as a whole to adapt this character? Like I said, you have your full Batman rogues gallery that's been around for so long. And I know some of the more modern villains like Scarface and some of those had been adapted into Batman, the animated series. Yeah. This is a case of a character who had just debuted in the comics in 1992. And now, like I said, almost 18 months later, less than a year, you're probably writing and directing this story, adapting this character that while it was a popular event, or it was very much in the forefront of pop culture at the time.
Yeah, I don't know how popular it was, But, you know, Bruce and I, we just talked about it a lot. And I think Mitch Bryan's script, I think Mitch was talked to after we made all these discussions, you know, about how Bane's going to be brought in. And the thing is that we kind of now wanted to do Bane to do, like, because it's like I looked at him and said, you know, because we go and say, yeah, look, here's this guy. He's a Mexican wrestler. You know? And then we go, yes, he's a South American Mexican wrestler. We'll just do that. And suddenly that was like where we found all of the fun in the episode. It doesn't hook up with the DC universe necessarily. But it became the animated universe.
Right.
It's the interpretation of, right. It's the animated interpretation.
And I remember this was actually it's like this rarely did Bruce do like a whole act storyboarding by himself. You know, he's doing all the characters and stuff like that.
Sure.
But he wanted to, because I was short one artist at this point, and Bruce said, I'll do the third act, you know. And it's like he wanted to do that last fight.
Very interesting. You
know? Yeah. And so it's like, so yeah, we were kind of on board with that. And just as an anecdote, when this episode was shown at Comic-Con, it was shown before it was on the air. And so when it's like, now I will break you. And the audience is like, oh, here it comes. And then Batman wins. Right? And like, oh, man. It's like some people booed. And it was like, just the reaction was great. You know, it's like people said, oh, you lost him. It's like, no, he didn't lose anybody. It's like, it's what it is.
You just took the story in a different direction.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny that you say that because, you know, I think when this episode debuted in 1984, I would have been six years old. So I remember watching this on Fox Kids when it debuted and having known what had happened in DC Comics. Like I said, everyone knew Batman's back got broken and they brought in a different Batman, and you have Batman versus Batman. So those parts of those comic stories were, like I said, pretty well known. So when you go and you see this with the Batman that I know and that I'm watching on a daily basis, and you hear Bane say the line, I will break you, and he goes up to do it, I remember the feeling in my chest as a little child. I'm like, oh, he's gonna do it, and then he doesn't. Like, it's that last little moment where you're like, no, he's not gonna do it. Batman's smarter than this. Batman will figure a way to outsmart this guy that's just pumped up on steroids.
Well, it's and I love the fact that we also created and I think this is a much better Bane. Wait, it was Henry Silva, right? Does the voice? Great performance.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's, and it's like, because once we just said, you know, you're El Santo. He's got it. It's like, no problem.
Yep.
Like, I love how he says stuff like, con su permiso. just so rich, you know?
Absolutely.
And the way he is, and the whole thing, one of my favorite characters, in the whole pantheon of Batman the Animated Series is Candace.
Ah, she's great. Which,
you know, it's like, I loved drawing Candace in like the Two-Face, where she shows up. It's like, you know, she's just so bad.
She's evil. And she's cut through the fact that she's willing to turn on her own boss.
Say, she has designs already that not only is Bane going to kill Batman and Robin and anybody else, but also she's already like planned out his next 10 years of taking over for Rupert Thorne's whole organization.
Yeah. And God bless Bruce, because there was like one thing, one of the things I asked for him to do, you know, he says, so you have any instructions or anything? It's like, I don't really give Bruce instructions. It's like, he's doing the board. I'm like, just grateful. I just said, you know what? The only thing that really that is my input directly was the fight between Candace and Robin. It's like, Robin, once he's free, he's not in a hurry.
Clearly,
you know, it's like, but you know, so it's like, come here, sweetie, you know. And
so she goes about that. Actually, was that for the story, was that done so that Robin didn't have to be involved in the Bane fight? Was there? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically because, you know, it would be the two of them.
Right.
And it has to be Batman versus Bane.
Right. It's the outlaw versus the sheriff at that point. Right.
And people have said to me, oh, well, you only did that because it's like, look, Robin just got knocked up, choked out by Bane.
Yeah.
He's been hanging by his wrists with a, I don't know, 500 pounds from his ankle.
Yeah. Right.
And it's like, so when Batman goes in to rescue him, Batman tries to, he says, no, get the weights.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically, he'll be okay if you just get the weights off his ankle. That's his problem.
Mm-hmm.
So once that happens, now he's, you know, he's been hanging here. He's been half drowned, all that. And Candace might have a chance.
Right. Seriously. Yeah. She seems like she's ready. I mean, there's a scene where she has the upper hand and is drowning him.
Yeah. It's like, and it's also, but, you know, Robin also is working from, you know, and it's like, it's actually kind of a fair fight because Robin's not trying to kill her.
Right.
She is trying to kill him.
She's like, she has like a handful of hair and the nails are digging in. Like, she's going for the eyes.
So it's like, that's the only thing that I kind of can take credit for is like, you know, you know, she takes her shoes off and just dives on them, you know.
She's ready to get in there and try and kill him. I love that.
Yeah. By the third time, you know, of course, Robin gets the upper hand.
Right. And it does break up the Batman fight too pretty well, because you have the intensity that's building with that, and then you have the cut back to this. It's not comedic, but it's entertaining. It's, you know, who's getting the upper hand between this worn down Robin and Candace.
If there's any moment that I would compare it to, it would be James Bond and you in where he's fighting with Thumper and Bambi.
There you go.
Because he's just, I mean, it's just bam, he's just getting taken out. Sean Connery's just getting taken out. They end up in the pool, and then the FBI shows up, or the CIA, and they're like, you okay? Yeah, just hang on a second. You know?
I love it.
It's like, so it's kind of, that's kind of the thing we were going for.
I love it.
And something that, just to give Bruce his due. Now he's on the series at this time. He's a very busy guy.
Mm-hmm. You
know? He's doing a lot. Mm-hmm. Character designs and, you know, taking meetings and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the whole board done, you know. Not, I didn't do the whole board myself, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, but the board's assembled and stuff. And the only thing that's missing is the third act. And I'm going, Bruce, I don't want to be a pain in the ass, but where's the third act? You know, we got a ship. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, I'll get to it. You know, he disappears. And I'm like, Jesus, there's only 3 days left, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, he's the boss. I mean, I really can't. I mean, I'm just trying to, in my head, I'm coming up with a contingency plan.
Right.
Of what we're going to do. Maybe I'll be able to grab Dan Reba or someone to help out. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But then the next day, Bruce comes in and he goes, there, boom. I'm like, when the hell did you do this? And I remember seeing a rough and going through it. And he says, you got any changes? And I said, no, this looks good. You know, it's like, it was his rough board, which is, you know, pretty complete.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, you know, it says, and I said, well, we'll make a copy of this and then we'll be good, you know, we'll have the rough board, you know, we can do changes. He says, no, I'll take care of it. Next day, like, he goes home, it's not done, he goes home.
Uh-huh.
The next day he goes, there, oomph. inked. It's like, you know, with a flare pen, with a, you know, the barrel marker. I mean, inked. The whole thing was inked, complete, with black and white, you know, beautiful.
Incredible.
Yeah. It's like, now, I mean, that was like a magic trick. There's so much drawing involved. I mean, you look at that act and really,
yeah,
every- he didn't
Every scene, there's something
in motion. Like it's there's a lot to that stuff.
Especially, not to mention inventing the ship, the background. Oh,
yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Those are all invented on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, that was like. I mean, I used to be fast, but and I've done boards that fast, but Jesus,
that was
shocking.
Yeah.
And it's great, you know, it's great. And it's like, and the weird thing is this particular episode, usually like the way Batman fights, the way that storyboards are done by, I think, you know, me, Mike Gogan, I think Brad Rader was on this one.
Mm-hmm.
The way that we board is a little bit different than the way that Bruce boards. Like mm-hmm. Bruce tends, when he has a fight with Batman, there's tends to be like big haymakers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That really works for Bane.
Yes.
Because Batman's got to bring it up from the ground to make it work. You know, his usual chops and stuff don't work. So it ends up being like a Mexican wrestler fight. Like cast a scissor kick him around the head and toss
right. him. There was so much, it felt like, and that was one of the things that we talked about. It's like, it felt like that fight scene was directly like he watched a Lucha Libre fight and was just like, all right, what can I pull from this? He's going to grab him. He's going to do the neck scissors. He's going to throw him off the ropes and clothesline him. Like we got different Lucha Libre moves in here with the villain who's literally a Lucha Libre. So
I was going to say, it's funny you mentioned that, you know, the idea of the way you guys kind of cracked Bane being that he's an evil Mexican wrestler, so to speak. And because it feels like that when he walks off the plane in the three-piece suit and the fedora, but he's got his mask on the whole time. And he's, you know, like it feels like very sacred. And that's obviously, if people don't know, like that in Lucha Libre culture is very sacred. They're never seen in public without their masks.
Mm-hmm.
Even when, you know, weddings, funerals, whatever, they're in that mask all the time. And then all the way going towards the end where Batman takes the mask off, that's the shame. That's when the wrestler loses his mask. That's like a great, you know, it's a great shame. That's usually the end of their career in Mexico. So it's like you play out this entire Lucha Libre career of Bane in this 22-minute cartoon.
Yeah. No, it's like I've been in that. I think we're pretty successful. And another thing too is like that we kind of threw in was the, I mean, of course it's Mitch, you know, doing the writing, but the fact that the mask thing, where Candace wants Robin's mask.
Yes. Yep.
She doesn't say, I don't know who he is.
Right.
She's like, I want his mask.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know,
that was also very, very intentional.
Yeah. I mean, those little things that you see, like as a kid, and we talk about that all the time when we're reviewing these episodes, that's what makes this series timeless, is that it was a show that kids watched, but it was written for adults to appreciate. You guys never talked down to your audience or oversimplified things to the point where, you know, you were insulting those that are watching. And that's why now as adults, we're rewatching these and reviewing them and going back like, man, I never would have picked up this subtle hints and references to Lucha Libre culture and honor and all of that stuff. And the mirroring of the mask at the end where he takes the mask off and hands it to, like, you don't pick up on that stuff, but you can as an adult and pick it up and it's just makes you appreciate it even more.
Yeah. And I like the contrast too, where we're cutting back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I've said this about Robin. The key to Robin is that, you know, everyone says, you know, how can Robin take on the bad guys that he does and all that? How can he do it? I actually talked to Lauren Lester about this. But it's like, no, Robin fights really dirty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if anyone noticed that, like, I mean, I don't know how he is in most of the other episodes, but certainly in ours, it's like in Demon's Quest, he just punches this guy in the nuts.
Yep. Yep. You know? Absolutely.
You know, it's like he takes the fish and he's like, it's totally, you know, and he does the nunchuck thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Know, where he just mercilessly beats this guy repeatedly and then pow, takes him out. Mm-hmm. And the thing here is like, the only person that fights dirtier than Robin is Candace.
Love that.
Like she bites him and it's like, you know,
it's like claws.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. So based on one follow-up, I guess, to the whole adaptation of this from the, or adaptation, I would say the adaptation of the character to this episode, was there ever for one brief second a discussion of Batman being broken for the series?
No,
it was from the get-go.
No, never. Bruce and I were just like, you know, I mean, if I remember right, you know, it's like, because DC would send comics, you know, mm-hmm. Bruce got like, and Bruce is like, well, look at this. It's like, so now there's going to be Detective Comics and it's not going to be Batman. It's going to be this other guy, you know, and that's what it was. I felt like, and I felt like that was just dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Batman just disappeared from Batman.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you know, we're going to have to recruit someone to take over Batman's job. It's like, no, it's like, it's not a job that has to be filled. Like, it's like he's compelled to do this. It's like,
he is Batman, right?
He does. It's what Batman does. It's what Robin joins him,
right?
You mm-hmm. know, in this for similar reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Who's this guy?
Right.
What was it? A red outfit, you know, yes. with a big stupid cape.
And, yeah. like, very, very early 90s aesthetic happening there.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, come on. It's like that belongs with Superman's long hair.
There you go. Yep.
The long hair Superman.
The Superman mullet. There you go.
Yeah, I think it's the what's the phrase is what you know, fixing something that's not broken type mm-hmm. of thing. Yeah. The idea of you know, well, we want to sell more comics, so we'll do this big shock event. It's okay. Did you have anything in mind after you do the big shocking event? So, like, for instance, if you guys had taken that thing, like, okay, what do you do? 5 episodes where Batman's just not in it, and then you have to build.
No, what you do is you go, his back's broken. Next episode, you know. 6 months later.
Right.
Robin's on his own. The town's gone to hell. Like, crime mm-hmm. is because Batman's not there. They think Batman's gone. And then it's about Batman coming back. But yeah, you don't have to have like a whole, well, how long was it? A year? 2 years?
Yeah. I think from the start, from the breaking. And then there's about 6 months of the new Batman, and then old Batman comes back, and then they have to have their big fight to pay that off. And yeah, I think it's over a year by the time it's all said and done. So it's a lot of time. And in the meantime, if say kids are watching Batman the Animated Series and then go to their comic store and go, hey, I want to read a Batman comic, I like the show, or I have the toys or whatever, and they go and Batman has big metal claws and red eyes and it doesn't look anything like what they're seeing on their TV screens, they might walk right back out of it and not buy a comic at all.
Yep.
No, I just don't buy it. And the whole thing too is, this guy with the claws, and it's like this murderous guy that Batman has unleashed on the city. It's like, what the? It's like Batman, he does not kill.
Right.
He will not use a gun.
Right.
He won't.
Right.
He doesn't have claws. It's like he wouldn't allow it. This guy that supposedly takes his place, Batman would have taken him out as a vigilante,
right?
He doesn't even like the Punisher doesn't put up with vigilantes,
right?
You know, he is one but he doesn't cause collateral damage,
right
precisely. Well, that's great. I as far as the episode is concerned and the plot of the episode is, we can give some scores here, and Kevin, hopefully give us a score of your own here. But so we go from one to 10 being the best here. You know, I love the way that you guys took a character, like I said, that was so so in focus at the time, and you swerve at the you think you're going left, and at the end you go right. I appreciate the way that was done. I appreciate that it wasn't just, well, we're going to do what they're doing in the comics, we're going to adapt this. I think it does feel like a rapid pace for the episode, because you have to introduce this new character, you have to establish how powerful he is. I love that the opening, both the introduction of the character and then the scene where he ends up beating up Croc, it's all designed to make you feel how powerful this character is. You have what, yeah. 10 minutes of screen time to establish this guy has to be a threat to Batman. How do we do that? And in the first couple scenes, it's he's big, he's getting out of the plane, people are gasping, he's bringing down the weight of the car. You know, he's
kicks hulking the heavy bag off the hook.
Yep, he's pumping iron there, like doing in his free time. So you have to establish that he puts one of Batman's most well-known powerful monster characters in traction. So you establish that this guy is no good. He means business. And so I wonder if you guys had been given maybe more time for a two-part episode, whether or not that would have slowed things down, maybe because it does feel like there's a rapid pace here at times. You have you have very little time to establish that. It would have maybe felt that for me, maybe felt that final fight a little more intense. But I don't know how often you guys were given the leeway to make a two-part episode, or what that process was like when you decided, hey, this story's too big for one episode.
Very rarely. I mean, you know, like Two-Face, because it's Harvey Dent, Bruce's pal, that was a two-parter. That was like, Catwoman, I think, was the first two-parter.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Cat McCall. Demon's Quest is another one that you guys...
Yeah. Now, and Demon's Quest, like Rachel Ghoul, that needed to be two parts.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
that needed, you know, that was just, Rachel Ghoul is just that big.
Absolutely. Well-deserved. With that said, I think with a 22-minute episode, I think the pacing works well. I love the final fight. It's so brutal. It's a lot more violent, I think, than most of the fights I remember from happening. It's... close fist punches, and
I was gonna say,
BS&P. The thing is, you establish, like, Bane is like a monster, and also the broad aspects, like the way that Bruce boarded it, it's like it's big, like smashing a box on his head,
right?
Like everything's big, so that actually, and he can take a mooring gun in the chest,
right? Mm-hmm. Right, yep. Yeah, so I think with that, it's paced very well. Like I said, I love the ending, and with Batman. Batman doesn't even haul him off to jail. He just drops him on Rupert Thorne's desk and is like, there you go. Nice try. Yeah. You go. You deal with it.
Bruce knows, Bruce Wayne, Batman knows that Rupert Thorne, you know, this is like, okay, Candace, you want to get punished?
Right.
You know, he doesn't say no, we're not even gonna chase her. I know where she's going.
Yep.
You know, this is it. It's like Bane is such a nothing to him now that he's just like, here, you know, what are you gonna do, you flabby?
Right. Precisely. I ended up giving a plot score of 7 out of 10. I think it's really good. I have a near and dear like love for this episode, like I said, just from the core memory of the intensity of wondering whether or not Batman was going to be broken. You know, I think for what the episode is asked to do, introduce this character, make him a threat, have the final fight between him, I think it's really strong. And I love the Robin kidnapping aspect too, that was, you know, that kind of creates this extra set of intensity of stakes.
I was gonna say, it's not something that we see in every episode, like, as you said, like Robin's shown to be very capable on his own, so it feels like it sets up this dude is really bad, because he took Robin apart real easy, and in a way that, with the exception of, I guess, Ra's al Ghul, who also, you know, they get the drop on him in Demon's Quest too, you know, showing up in his dorm room. So in a
but it's only because Ra's al Ghul knows who Bruce
Wayne,
he knows Bruce Wayne's identity,
right?
He knows Robin's identity,
right? So it wasn't relied on as a crutch for you guys on the series to just put the kid in danger, and that makes the stakes higher. So I appreciate it. when it does happen, it feels earned, I think, in that way.
Absolutely.
But I ended up going with an 8 out of 10 for my plot score for that reason. I just love the way it's laid out, and like we've talked about, I really love that aspect of the evil Lucha Libre wrestler coming to town and challenging the champ, so to speak.
Love that. Yeah. Kevin, you give the score?
I'd give this script, you know, a 9 out of 10.
There we go.
Just because unfairly, you know, it was like kind of like, this is what we want. And Mitch Bryan delivered.
There you go.
Absolutely.
I love it. All right. So we'll move on to our next category, which is going to be the animation and visuals aspect. I didn't make a note. Which animation studio did this
one? We have Dong Yang to thank for this one. How were they to work with as a studio?
Well, it's deceiving because Dong Yang would actually farm. They were actually a company that would farm things out to different studios. So my guess is that this was early Sun Min animation, I think. Okay. It's hard to tell because it's like Harley's Holiday is Don Yang too.
Mm-hmm.
Harley's Holiday, the animation is like everything I could want.
Right.
You know, especially animating the hyenas.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I believe, DR Movie.
Okay. Interesting.
Back at that, who was very good. You know, they were all TMS satellite studios.
Gotcha.
So I'm kind of disappointed, but then again, you know, like I'm disappointed in a lot of the animation.
Right.
You know,
right.
People look at it and go like, "Oh my God, this is a classic," and I'm like, "Well, you know," but when it comes back, I am nothing but critical.
Right. Right.
You know?
I imagine as somebody who has this vision as the director, the vision in your head, this is what it needs to look like, and then you get it back.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's never going to be what in your brain what it should look like or what it could look like.
Yeah.
And you're going to be the harshest critic because it's coming from your brain. It's your baby.
It's kind of like I look at it and I go like the airport stuff, you know, it's like they don't quite get the aircraft correctly in my mind. You know, there's just things. And it's like, again, it's not a big budget.
Sure.
Right.
These were not big budget cartoons. Disney was spending... And Sony animation too at the same time. Sony's like spending like, you know, at least $20,000 more per episode.
Wow.
Warner Brothers was, you know, they were one of the cheapest studios in the business at that time. They got great results, you know, especially TMS would, you know, really pour it on.
Yes.
Don Yang did very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's like I look at this and some of the scenes are great. You know, it's like just like the animation's like great, you know, A+. Mm-hmm. And then in other times, you know, and like for instance, it's like you look at different stuff, it's like Killer Croc. The Killer Croc stuff is some of the best stuff in the episode.
Agreed. Yeah.
You know? And then there's the stuff on the ship, which is some of the best stuff in the episode, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like, and then you know what? The probably the best bit of animation is when Batman. I love this. It's like I think I storyboarded that myself. I'm not. I seem to remember doing the drawings, but when Candace goes back to her apartment, you know, opens up the closet, which is a mirror, and then closes it, and Batman's right there. You know,
so classic.
The animation in that is really good, and the best part. Is she's watching TV, and when Candace, you know, when she leaves, that little bit of animation on the TV set, I can't remember. I think that those little characters that are animating, like that's some of the best animation in the whole series.
It's a nice little detail of like, she was watching TV and she leaves, and you get a visual of what the cartoons that were on the television.
Yeah. I seem to remember that being designed by Dan Reba.
Interesting.
It could be by Mike. I mean, that could have been Mike Gogan too. I'm not sure, but just like a little.
So good. Yeah.
Just two little characters chasing the other.
Okay. Absolutely. I was going to ask. So the actual Bane design, the character design itself, you know, there was a book that came out maybe 20 years ago now called Batman Animated that I believe is narrated by Paul Dini, and he mentioned that Bruce had taken the kind of the early takes on him and was kind of a very Kirby influenced design. You remember who kind of, did you have any hands on the final touches on him or?
Oh no, that's all Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's like Bruce may ask, you know, it's like there are discussions about how we are like, no, he's a Mexican wrestler. It's Santo, you know, it's Santo gone bad.
Right.
Other than that, that's just Bruce's design.
I was going to say, yeah. Again,
he would come into the room and say, there, what do you think? You know, and I'd go,
right.
Looks great. Yeah, I don't know. I can do something else. Yeah,
I was going to say, yeah, from that book, the earlier designs definitely had, I think, a little bit more of a Kirby influence on like the buckles on the boots and things like that. But then the final design definitely has more like the classic, you know, wrestler boots and things. Once I guess you guys knew you were really going to lean into that.
Yeah.
That side.
Yeah. Design wise, that's all Bruce.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things, some of the elements, the original Bane story, at least the breaking of Batman, comes from Batman number 497, which had pencils from Jim Aparo and Dick Giordano did the inks on it. But one of the things that I caught.
Great artist.
Absolutely.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. My question is, there's two scenes. So the famous panel of Batman actually being broken in the comic is pretty, it's notorious. It's a very memorable panel. It's all red in the background and Batman's being broken over Bane's knee. There's two separate scenes. One is the first scene where Bane pumps up and uses the Venom for the first time. There's an all red background that's used. And then when Batman kind of overloads the Venom at the end, that same effect was put on. Was there any influence that you remember from those panels or anything, or was it just a visual effect that was used to like intensify things?
That's just something that, you know, that I do.
Nice.
And then that certainly comes from the days, me, Dan Reba, Brad Rader back at, and Mike Gogan back at Deke in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like obsessed with Miyazaki.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we studied Miyazaki.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, but it's not just Miyazaki, that's kind of a going all the way back to the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Japanese animation trope, you know.
For sure. Yeah.
That's just something, it's like we're, you know, it's like a classic color card kind of thing. That's all. And it's like it just seemed appropriate there. It's not really it wasn't really like the red background from there. Yeah. And it just seems like when his power comes on, that's what it is, in the heart pumping sound effects and
stuff. Yeah.
It just seemed very appropriate. But it's like, you know, I would do that stuff. If you look at episodes that I do, it's like there's many things like that. It's just it's just us doing the same thing we've done before.
Love it. I love it. I mean, to me, it is like it's the exclamation point on that scene of you knowing, okay, something bad is about to go down, or this is the intensity is turning up in this scene with the power that he's getting from whatever this drug or, you know, is pumping through his veins at this point. So I do love that little, it's just another one of those little visual cues that end up adding to the scene in and of itself.
I was gonna say, I love that the full transformation that he goes through when the Venom kicks in, you really don't get that until that last act, because we see it almost off screen in that initial,
it's all shadow.
He Kool-Aid mans into the room to fight Croc. And then we hear cop, you know, and then we see maybe the stuff start to go in, and then you see the shadow, the silhouette grow larger, but we don't see it until that third act. So I love almost, it's like the movie monster. You don't quite get the reveal of the Mr. Hyde until that third act.
Yep, that's intentional.
Yeah, there's a lot of movie monster DNA.
I'm glad you noticed.
Yeah, movie monster DNA in Bane, especially in this interpretation of him. When you get the flashback of Batman watching the surveillance video of him, and he sits up very, you know, Frankenstein like, and starts destroying everything in the room and killing the guards and whatever else happens.
Yeah. There was more, and I think that was mostly Mike Gogan, but there was more to that scene, but just BS&P was like, no.
Very interesting.
We have the one guy show up with a Tommy gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you'll see Bane just like knocks it down.
Uh-huh.
There was more.
Interesting,
but they're like no
the stuff on the cutting room floor,
man. Yeah, don't make it so obvious that
Oh man, that's great. One of the other questions that I had, and this is something that was used throughout, there's scenes that stick out in my mind from the Two-Face episode, from the Demon's Quest, but I know it was a trope that was used throughout different episodes of the original Batman the Animated Series run. So you have certain scenes that are painted, they're not animated. You may have a piece of the that is animated. What went into the decision making? When would you guys decide, like, okay, this scene, or what was the thought process behind this scene doesn't need to be a full animation piece here, we're going to do a still painting? And that happens like two or three times, I think, in this Bane episode, where you get a painted section where nothing else needs to be animated, but it's clearly just a painted cell.
Yeah, well, that's just something that we always look to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that actually, for the most part for us, that came as kind of homage to Fleischer Brothers.
That's mm-hmm. what we thought.
yeah, it's like it's what Fleischer used to do, you know. It's like from Popeye and mostly, you know, in Superman, certain mm-hmm. Superman cartoons. And that's, you know, it's one of those things that when you see it, you know,
mm-hmm.
you want, I mean, Chuck Jones would do the same.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I can't remember who did like the giant one. It could have been Arthur Davis. I'm not sure. It was either Friz Freleng or Arthur Davis did the Bugs Bunny. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I saw it as a little kid, like, that's in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to do it. So, you know, where Bugs Bunny, the giant, like, you get to the big close up of the giant and Bugs Bunny's walking. And it's like, it's all painted. The giant's just painted now.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to move.
So
it's just one of those things you always try and work in. And in Batman, we were able to do that.
I was going to say, it also probably is, there's a side effect of what we just talked about of not always being thrilled with what you get back from the animation studios, where there it's mostly out of the studio's hands. It's like you guys get to really set that, you know, those images to be the, you know, yeah, like the one that always pops in my head is like the Riddler debut or something like that. Like you mentioned in Two-Face, certainly like those, some of the more iconic images that people constantly still to this day talk about from the show, and, you know, having it be a still image there, you know, maybe also cuts down on the chance of it, you know, coming back a little off model or a little less than you guys being a little less than thrilled with.
Don't worry. They screw that up as much as they screw up. Like those get called back a lot too. It's like, what the hell kind of a painting is that? Happens quite often.
Very interesting. It's interesting because we, whenever we see them, the first thought that we have is Fleischer Superman. So it's great to hear that's
completely the influence.
Love it.
And it's intentional.
There you go. As far as the visuals and the animation for the episode, like I said, I think, well, Kevin, you're going to be the harshest critic because based on how it turned out for what you were looking for, I think for the most part, it's a fun episode. I love, like I said, that first act establishing just how destructive Bane is, where you get him breaking through the wall. Also the title card itself.
Yeah, that title card is badass.
Man, so good. It right away, again, you're establishing this character, bringing him into this universe that, hey, this guy's walking through a wall here. Like, you have this back silhouette. And then to kind of, to have that portion be in the episode where he breaks through the, you know, the sewer wall and decimates one of Batman's most, you know, heavy duty villains, mm-hmm. Is great. And then you have the, you know, him destroying the Batmobile with his bare hands.
I was gonna ask actually, so I imagine is the title card done last? So is that Eric Radomski taking an image from the finished cartoon and going, that should be the title card for
I don't remember. That certainly happened because that was after the board was done, certainly.
Okay.
So it's like sometimes they'd happen pretty early on. A lot of times they happen after the animations come back.
Okay.
Very interesting.
You know, because the painters we had, like, I think that was painted by John Calmette. I'm not positive. But anyway, you know, once the decision's made for what it is, you know, those things would come out. And it's like most of the time I get to handle the original, you know. What do you think?
Man.
You know,
we've been clamoring for those need to be collected in some sort of
like a coffee table book.
They're so iconic and beautiful. Like, and so often the memories linked with episodes go with those title cards being established. It just beautiful pieces of artwork. Liam, anything stick out for you for the visuals for this episode?
Well, I think we already touched on it a little bit when we were talking in the plot, but I just love how much like wrestling moves are done in that final that final act. Like, yeah. You know, Batman doing the head scissors and flipping him over, and Bane, as you said, Cal, throwing him off the ropes of the, like the, you know, the guardrail of the ship and all of that. And just like that, when there's a shot where Batman kind of goes to do like some body blows, and he's just, it just looks like he's hitting a wall. Mm-hmm. Like it's just, yeah. Bane's not budging an inch. And I love the way that whole final act kind of comes together as a, and ultimately the way Batman triumphs isn't by punching harder, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh. He has to use his brain. Outwits.
I love this, honestly, and it I didn't remember it. I remember that he beat him with a batarang, but I didn't remember that it was the crushed batarang. And I love that even in the animation, you see Batman roll over and quickly, if you're able to catch it, he snatches the batarang off of the ground. Just,
and it's in his hand the whole time until he
playing possum. Yeah. Playing possum there so he can
out. No, it's like he waited till he was raised over his head and he can get at that stupid little box.
love it. One or two other sequences that I really enjoyed. I love when Robin is spying on Bane and Thorn. Mm-hmm. And then we get the scene of Bane sneaking up behind him completely in silhouette. It adds to that monster mm-hmm. character feel of like, oh no, we can see the monster sneaking up on our hero, but the hero doesn't know yet. Mm-hmm. So good. Yeah.
And he got there real fast.
I was going to say, his steps are like three of normal human steps, I guess, because of his size. He was,
you know, and the thing is like, you know, he comes up the wall.
Right. Right.
So he climbed the building.
Just insane. And then there's a couple of other Batman in silhouette, you know, as you mentioned, the one that Kevin mentioned in Candace's apartment. And then we have it again in the jail cell with, I love Killer Croc, the visual of Killer Croc in the traction, just like this monstrous character that Batman just messing with the traction to get this information out of him. Oh man, yeah. so good. I really liked the visuals for this. I ended up with a solid 8 out of 10 for this. What about you, Lynn?
Yeah, I think if it's not clear, Kevin, I'm a huge wrestling nerd. So so that aspect, which again is not something I remembered from previous viewings of this, of how steeped in from the character work to the visuals and the animation, I actually went with a little bit higher, with a 9 out of 10 for my animation scores.
Kevin,
I'll abstain.
You abstain. All right.
Because it's not fair. My opinion's not fair.
That's fair.
He's his own harshest critic. That's fair. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be our music for this episode. And the fantastic Lolita Ritmanis, responsible for the music for this week. From the title card forward, you get the doom and gloom of this gigantic, massive character that's come into Gotham City to take out Batman.
Say, it almost feels like that when that Bane theme comes in, it's like steps, mm-hmm. like yeah. as like when he moves, the theme moves with him, kind of thing.
Yeah. Now I'll say one thing, mm-hmm. and I give music, I give this 10 out of 10.
Noted. Yeah.
I haven't said that, but. What I kind of wanted was guitar,
ooh,
mm-hmm. like flamenco guitar.
Oh, that would have been neat.
But you know that. But then that's not monster.
Sure,
right.
Totally
right.
Understand that. Yeah, you probably could have infused that in some way, or maybe even in the final battle, you had some of that going on there. I like
now
that.
Now, Lolita and everyone else is correct. You know, they're I was just thinking, you know, wrestler, you know,
right,
wrestler, you know, and that would have lightened it up.
True, oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So they're correct. You know, I'm not, there's no complaints.
So how much did, when you directed episodes, did you guys have communication for what you like direction or just a general idea of music? Or was that all stuff that you just gave to her and Miss Shirley Walker and everybody else? Oh.
No, we always, there's always discussions
mm-hmm.
before. And it's like, especially with Shirley.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've told people this several times, but like Shirley would come into the office and say, you know, so what do you, you know, she'd actually come into the office and says, I'm going, okay, I'm working on Two-Face. So any thoughts, you know, let me know. It's like, what do you want? You know, what are you thinking? And then like one time I went there, I remember I was with Bruce. He says, Shirley is working on Two-Face. Let's go, you know, go to the, she wants us there. She wants it. Wow. She wants your opinion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Bruce and I go there. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting there, you know, like in the back, and we go like, whoa, holy shit. There's like five piece orchestra here,
right?
Maybe it was only 35, but it was a lot, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cellos, you know, just every, you know, it's like it's and it's in one of the Warner Brothers, you know, sound stages, not a sound stage, but you know, like where they record music. Big screen. And Shirley's like, oh, good, you're here. Okay, now I want, you know, your idea. See what I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. Okay, here comes the image. You know, I'm like, whoa, shit. So then, and it ends. And Bruce and I are just, whoa. And she turns around. So what did you think? It's great. No, don't you see? You know, it's like she's looking for an argument. She wanted input,
right?
Mm-hmm. But it's like, what are you gonna say? It's right. Like, you know, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Can I just sit here? Well,
right. Tremendous. I love that. Yeah.
It was just hard to. I mean, there. It was so good. She was so good. But yeah, they wanted input.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. And I, you know, as if you're working in a visual medium on a regular basis and you hear this just massive, impressive, incredible piece of music, I can't imagine jumping up to say, actually, I think you could have used a little more xylophone. It's like the first thing that jumps into your head.
I need more cowbell.
Right. There you go. But Liam and I talk about it all the time, Kevin, about how important the music was to this show and how a lot of times in episodes, it feels like its own character. And specifically, I mean, I think this episode is another one of those that you can point to. We talked about it, the heaviness of the character, the monster character, the compositions that Mr. Romanus worked on for this episode to do that emphasize the threat of Bane to this Batman character and help establish this guy as a real threat. And man, just another amazing thing about this
series. Especially, and what we talk about is how these different categories that we talk about all work in concert to bring you this, you know, the great package altogether, where, as we mentioned, we don't really get the full reveal of Bane's visually. We don't get the full reveal of Bane's full power until that final act. But we hear the music when he's standing there in front of Croc, and we see the shadow grow, and we get this really, you know, like you start to like kind of turn inward, like you get a little bit claustrophobic in that moment of like, oh yeah. God, Croc's got to get out of here, like like he's gonna die, like and that a lot of that comes from the, you know, the silhouettes and everything in the visual department, but also from that music and the way the score builds to that big crescendo. Even though we're not seeing the horrible violence that is being implied.
Well, and that's a shortcut. Mm-hmm. That's an animation shortcut. Like, you know, you know, it's like there is only so much money we have for animation.
Sure.
And so that's a clever, you know, way that we make the decision very consciously. It's like, okay, we're just going to hear him getting the snot beat out of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's like, it's much worse than, you know, what could have done this to Croc?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's not even trying to get away from Batman.
Mm-hmm. It allows the viewer's imagination to create what the level of violence was with, and you avoid the BSMP, write backs of, hey, you can't show that in your cartoon. So I love that. Music, very strong for this episode. Very enjoyable. I gave it a 9 out of 10. Personally, Liam, what about you?
Yeah, I'll agree with our guest here. I'm also going to give it a 10. I think I just love that Bane theme and the way it marches with him as he, you know, as whether he's lunging towards Robin or when he's, you know, hulking up, so to speak, and getting the venom into his system there. So
Very good. All right. Our last category of the day is going to be our voice acting. We have not a huge list this week of actors to talk about. Kevin, we'll talk about any thoughts or memories. Last time we had you on, you shared some great stories. Anything that you remember about the casting other than what you talked about already with the casting of our Bane and him getting it right away? Anything else you remember about this?
I mean, it's like just when we talked to a little bit with Andrea, she would, call up and say, so you got any ideas, about this episode or whatever, like when it came out. And it's like, so we're hitting on that, the Mexican wrestler thing. Mm-hmm. Soon as you said that, she's like, she casts it, and it's Silva, it's like, and it's like, what are you going to say?
Right.
Like, it's like, well, what do you see for, Mr. Freeze? It's like, you kind of describe, he's like this cold emotion. He's like Michael Ansara.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. that's kind of how that was. And of course, Candace.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just fantastic.
It's like, I wish that she could have been in more episodes.
Yeah.
We were talking about that a little bit before we went on the air here.
Wait, was that Meredith? Who played Candace?
It's Diane Michelle, I believe.
Yeah. Just, what a great nasty voice.
Right. It's overtly evil. Like a sultry, evil.
Yeah.
Like
it's kind of like you had young Lauren Bacall,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Spot on.
It's like, the few people there. And of course, Lauren Lester is perfect.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's perfect. He totally gets Robin. And some people have said, it's like, boy, how'd you feel about having Robin and, the Batman? It's like, because early on, we kind of didn't have Robin so much.
Sure.
But you'll notice when Robin shows up, in the episodes, it's like, he's not there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's there, it's like, there's no,
Yeah.
This is like, Lauren's really good, It's like one of the few times where it's like, he's way up front.
Yeah.
Yeah, he plays like in Harley's. Yeah. The only other one I'd compare it to would be like Harley's Holiday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good luck with Zippy there. just like how he dresses, and he has the best line. I mean, this has got nothing to do with this one, but his delivery is just so perfect. It's like, he's such a sarcastic teenager.
Yep.
So it's like, what was she before this happened? She's a clinical psychologist.
So good. We'd be remiss, of course, not to mention Kevin Conroy's amazing performance in this.
God, that hurts.
I can imagine. As somebody who knew him, that must be it. Yeah. Must be pretty raw but
yeah, that's pretty recent. That was terrible.
Yep.
Yeah. I know he was sick, but still, that was like a psychic ball punch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just suddenly that happened. That was like, it's just terrible. It's like, because he's one of the you just look forward to seeing him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every convention, he's at, and it's like, and he, and it's like he knows you. It's like an end to end. You can, and he really, and he's really happy to see you.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I saw him was at the New Jersey Meadowlands East Coast Comic Con,
mm-hmm.
Where I was on a panel with him and Lauren and Diane Pershing. Anyway, and Andrea was there too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like again, hadn't seen him for a few years, and it's like I had a booth there where I was signing and doing artwork and stuff, and he comes over.
Wow.
He comes over to say hi. Lauren too. It's like everyone, like they they're busy.
Right.
They're busy. They're like the actors, like I'm kind of busy.
Yeah.
They're busy, he was very conscious when he would go out with the whole fan circuit thing. Like he gave 100%.
Yes,
absolutely.
And he made everyone, you know, he was very conscious of being Batman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. What it means, especially to kids, And he's like, he was just to see him like just interacting the way he would do it. It's just really great.
You know? That was the thing that we, I mean, unfortunately we never got to meet him in person, but every interaction that we have either witnessed, whether, you know, seeing a video of him or hearing other people's chances, was that he was just the most genuine, kind, loving person, you know, and really relished the Batman mantle and saw it as something to take care of and to really relish and to use for good.
And I'm sure this
happens. True.
Yeah, with a lot of actors, you know, especially with Kevin having such a, you know, brilliant stage career, you could understand being a little bit, you know, tired of hearing about Batman after a couple of decades, but he never was. Like he really appreciated that and wanted to, you know, to give back to everybody that loved him and gave him that adulation. He seemed to give it right back. So,
yeah. And now there's I don't know. It's like voice wise.
There,
no one can touch him. No one can touch him for that role.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's like the most wonderful thing was there was only one discussion, you know, at the recordings where he would, you know, where there's these things where it's like, when he's Bruce Wayne, and this is pure Kevin Conroy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you notice Batman's voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
When Bruce Wayne is with Talia,
mm-hmm.
it's Batman's voice. Mm-hmm. He's Bruce Wayne, but that's who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Batman is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Wayne's higher voice is that's the put on.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that's Kevin Conroy's invention. And it's very convincing. They don't sound like the same person.
Nope, not at all.
But they are, and yet they still are. And even at that, when Bruce Wayne gets mad, you know, he's not a pushover. Mm-hmm. Like in Harley's Holiday, the performance is just wonderful. Mm-hmm. How he goes from, you know, going, Miss, knocking on the door, and it's like, but he's not a pushover, you know, at all. And it's like, you know, it's like, geez, who dresses you? You know, Alfred. And he's like, well, actually, that's just wonderful. It's wonderful, just that. He's just so gifted with that. Yeah. And it's hard work too.
Oh, absolutely. And the way he could kind of, I mean, I think about, like, you know, in Mask of the Phantasm. When he's doing, when the DA is kind of mentioning Andrea to him and he's wants to get out of the conversation, he says, here's your handkerchief, you know where you can stick it. That's still the put on Bruce Wayne voice, but the real Bruce is starting to poke through there. And like the mid levels where he could still be in the public persona voice, but know that this is a real emotion still coming through in that was always very impressive.
Yeah. And like someone that talented, and it's like just the fact that every time he saw you, you just felt like you were the most important person at that moment.
Absolutely.
That's been a thought that I heard reiterated over and over again. So that's incredibly missed. And I mean, one of the things that we talked about in continuing to review these episodes is the bittersweet aspect of hearing that voice and appreciating what incredible performances and what an incredible human that he was. But also knowing that this is the, you know, there may not be more in the can going forward. So there's not much new content left, but I think this episode from everything, the line that got me was when the line directly taken from the comic, "Say my name," right before he's about to break him.
Yeah.
And he says, "Never." The way that he delivers that with such intensity and spit in the face.
It's almost Clint Eastwood in that moment. Like he's
so good, man. Like the everything from the you know, his conversation with Alfred, the joking about Bane, you know, being from man to man, destroying his car and having that jocular way of sharing that with Alfred, you know, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.'s Alfred. So good. Mm-hmm. You know, it made the entire episode for sure.
Absolutely. I was like, my one last note about voice actors, of course, John Vernon as Rupert Thorne. That last line is like burned into my brain.
Candace.
When he plays the recording of Candace and Bane, and he just king of the world walks out of the room having won the day, and you just hear Candace.
Is this the best you can throw at me, Rupert? Go on, Candace. Take his mask. Thought you might like to hear this, Rupert. It's a new release. Maybe we'll call it Better Luck Next Time.
With Batman out of the way, Gotham could be yours. So could I.
And what about your employer?
Well, accidents do happen.
Candace?
Incredible. Yep. Oh, Mr. Vernon, such a joy. I always love when we get to visit with that character.
Yeah. No, it's like, yeah. And again, hell of a nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
You know, it's like every time you'd see him, it's like him, Bob Hastings, you know, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. They're like, they remember things that you mentioned about your life.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, like if I said I was going to a concert, I was going to go and see, like, you know, Tom Tom Club. Said, how was that? You know, was it good? Like, you know, next time you saw him a couple months later, it's like they'd remember all that stuff.
Caring individuals. It's great when you hear people that you look up to were actually, you know, good people too. It's always good to hear that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
As far as scores go, you know, it's hard not to give a perfect score for this, but I'm going to give.
Oh, yeah. No, these guys, this for me too. It's like, no, this is like, I can't say it. It's like, and the thing is, it's like that this is even a lighter cast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't go to the commissioner. You don't go. It's like there's so many people who are not involved.
Yeah. It's
and
a,
yet, you know, it's solid.
Yeah.
And if you listen closely, there's a, I believe it's me and Bruce. There's some grunts and stuff that I can hear. I remember doing, you know, what they great. Just get to it's like where, you know, the guy with the valise is like,
oh, that's so great. So 10s across the board for our voice acting scores here. Well, that's great. We will begin to wrap things up and get our final scores here. But Kevin, thank you so much for joining us on the episode today. You know, it's always a treat when we have you on to discuss this. Thanks for the behind the scenes look and sharing the stories and giving scores and sharing your thoughts on this this episode that means so much to Liam and I.
No problem. My pleasure.
So totaling up our scores at the end here, Liam, I end up with a 35 out of 40, and you end up with a very strong, and putting it in our top pick section, 37 out of 40. We're going to give Kevin an incomplete score since he abstained from our animation and visuals category.
Thanks, us, from a while ago when we recorded that interview. Yeah, Cal, this was a great show to watch and a great show to recap with Kevin and to hear all those thoughts, all his behind the scenes stories, both working with Bruce Timm as a storyboard artist on this episode, their kind of reluctance or lack of excitement, we should say, perhaps for even using Bane in the series, and course on a bit more of a serious note, you know, his conversation with us about the late great Kevin Conroy was just beautiful and very touching. So we always thank Kevin for his time and for being so honest and being so willing and generous with his time for us. So thanks again to Kevin for joining us this week, and we hope to have him back on soon.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was great to hear. I love the insight. It's interesting that so the DCAU wiki talks about how the writer of the episode, Mitch Bryan, who I didn't realize only worked on three episodes for the series, or is only credited for three episodes of the series. But they're pretty important ones. POV on Leather Wings, and then this one. So go figure. But Mitch mentions apparently mentioned in an interview that that Bruce Timm had mentioned the episode was done under duress, which makes you think that this is a as we talked about with Kevin, sort of a directive. And it's interesting hearing just the general thought process of what the perception of the Bane character was, especially when he seemed to be such a pun intended large figure in the main continuity at the time. But makes a lot of sense why maybe shoehorning this type of character into the series was a little bit more difficult and maybe not as welcomed as one would think. So lots of incredible insight. Thank you again to Kevin for his time and his willingness to be open with us and share some of those memories of this episode, because it's an episode that's near and dear to our hearts. Another one we had on videotape, another one, again, I think just from the cultural impact of the Nightfall storyline, when we had Bane introduced into this series, kind of figuring out how it was going to fit in there. And I love that Kevin was just like, no, we never considered breaking Batman. Like it wasn't, he was a joke. Like it was, we didn't like Bane. It was dumb. We thought it was dumb. Like,
yeah. And the way they kind of came around to the idea once they came up with that angle of him being, kind of a hired hand. And also sort of, as I mentioned, sort of pulling from some of the great stars of Lucha Libre pro wrestling in Mexico over the years, this guy who never removes his mask, this kind of international man of mystery sort of thing going on, like how they were able to crack the walnut despite their initial disinterest in working with the character was fun to hear about how that process came together as well.
I was gonna say it did not show up in how the final product came up that there was any sort of disdain for the character. I don't think
maybe would. Yeah, I mean he looks like an oaf in that final act, but again, that's I think for the way this character is portrayed, this isn't, necessarily the cerebral mastermind that's putting Batman through months and months of torture and wearing him down. This is in this case, he's a hired hand and comes back a few times in the new Batman Adventures and Superman. So not the end for this character in the DCAU. So we'll have plenty more opportunities to talk about him in the future. But as we begin to wrap up today, Cal, we want to thank everybody for listening, whether you do so on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or of course, as Cal mentioned at the top of the show, on the Pod Tower YouTube channel, where once again, you can subscribe and get content from not only us, but also from the great Jump on the Batwagon podcast, archive live streams from the Watchtower database, and of course, Tim Talks back catalog as well. So lots of great stuff for you to listen to. If you'd like to support our show more directly, other than subscribing on your favorite podcast app, a great way to do that, there's a couple of links in the show notes. You can either head to our store and pick yourself up some merch, or of course, there is a direct donate button where you can buy us a coffee if you so choose. We have a few people that do that every month, and we are very appreciative of that. So those links are in the description as well. And Cal, as we begin to wrap things up, as we talked about, it's the 30th anniversary of Nightfall. Bane is we've got Bane on the brain, so to speak, and we thought we might keep that Bane train rolling into next week with our fifth Saturday of the month. And that means an Elseworlds tale is upon us.
How long have you been working on that Bane train line?
Just came to me just now.
Incredible. What an incredible mind.
Bane on the brain and Bane train back to back in like 10 seconds.
It's a beautiful mind. I'll just say that. You guys don't know how lucky I am to from the brilliant mind that I have, the creative comedic mind of my brother, Liam. That's right, Liam. We are going to take a trip around the Elseworlds, a trip around the multiverse to visit another Elseworld. And we are going to be checking out a world that we have not visited very often, actually. We've visited maybe a handful of times before, at least two or three. But it's one of those that I think one of those worlds that hasn't quite gotten its flowers yet. And, we're probably coming up on some important anniversaries of this show here. Maybe I think next year might be the 20th anniversary.
Yeah.
20th anniversary next year. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, maybe some of the nostalgic feelings start coming around. It's tough because it quite it lives in the proverbial shadow, pun intended, of the Batman animated series. But we're gonna check out an episode of the 2004, at least that was the year it debuted, animated series The Batman, which of course does not take place in the DCAU, but came right after kind of the end or the wrap up of the DCAU. Justice League Unlimited was still going on at the time. Mm-hmm. Responsible purportedly for the famous Bat embargo in the DCAU. But yeah, for this episode, keeping with our theme here, at least for this episode, and celebrating the 30th anniversary of Nightfall, we're going to talk about that episode, or that series debut episode for the character Bane, in the episode Traction.
Absolutely, a much, much different take on Bane. If you're a more of a comic book traditionalist and you like seeing a version of Bane that just tears through Batman the first time they meet, well, this is the episode for you. So we'll be definitely looking forward to discussing that episode next week. But until then, I'm Liam.
And I'm Cal.
And we'll be back soon with another episode of the DCAU Review.
Adios.